This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. In this week's program, even though there's enough food in the world to feed everyone on the planet, many people still go hungry. A World Food Program official explains what needs to be done to change this. And a former child soldier tells us how education and religion helped him find his place in society. But first, farmers battling drought in Ethiopia have a small window of opportunity this September to plant a last set of crops for the year, according to the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO. The UN agency is appealing for $45 million in additional funding to support farmers so they can produce food for millions of their fellow citizens who are facing hunger. FAO reports that Ethiopia has staved off the worst of the drought, which was followed by flooding brought on by the weather phenomenon known as El Nino. Sandra Ferrari asked FAO Surge Response Team Leader in Ethiopia, Pierre Vautier, about the extent of its impact on the agricultural sector.
The El Nino drought we faced between 2015 and 2016 was one of the worst we had since 20 years. So indeed, it has a very huge impact on the agriculture. I mean, several seasons in a row has been failed. Since Ethiopia is a mainly agricultural country, I mean, 60 to 80% of the population is living out of pastoralist, agro-pastoralist or farming activities. It has a very huge impact, not only on the economy, the global economy, but on the households, on everybody. We are forced to move, to live, or to ask for international and national assistance. So during the drought, in fact, thousands of livestock also have died because of lack of grazing area, because during the drought, of course, there is no grass, and also, of course, because of a shortage of water.
What sort of damage is expected with a potential strike from La Niña?
Well, first, La Niña is going to come around October, November. This is, at the moment, a prediction. There is 60% of chance that La Niña is coming. If La Niña is arriving, that means two things for Ethiopia. The first thing, in the island, so in the very island around Addis Abeba, but all the eastern side of Ethiopia, which is a highland, will be flooded. And we're going to destroy a number of things, including buildings, maybe some roads, but also it will have an impact also, of course, on agriculture and livestock. In the lowland, there will be drought. There will be a second cycle of drought for this population, which will be very catastrophic for this population, while still not yet recovered from the El Nino drought.
And if funding needs are met, what will the response plan look like?
So first, FAO has managed to buy and distribute to the population 4,500 tons of seeds, including crop seeds, but also some root crops and some cuttings. We managed to reach 145,000 households, which is very important. If you multiply by 4-5, when we give the seeds, it's for the entire family. The entire family is benefiting from this. So our current priority for the moment is try to get some additional funding in order to be able to hit a very small window. We have the capacity to help the population to plant peas. And it's very important because peas, it's something very, very, very in deficit in Ethiopia.
Making sure that everyone gets access to food is one of the main challenges facing the international community, according to the World Food Programme, WFP. The UN agency says there's enough food to feed the more than 7 billion people on the planet, but a lack of equality means that many people, especially in parts of Africa, are going hungry. International experts recently gathered at UN headquarters in New York to discuss the issue at a meeting entitled Leaving No One Behind in Food Security and Nutrition Governance. Basma Bagal spoke to Amir Abdullah, the WFP Deputy Executive Director. She began by asking him whether ending hunger was a realistic aim.
It's not an easy task, and it won't be achieved overnight. But if you actually think about that there is more than enough food in the world today to feed the current population, probably some people estimate that you could feed double the population of the world today with the food that either is grown or could be grown. So we know that the resources are there. So now it really is a matter of access. How do we actually make sure that people have access? So the goal is a realistic one because the resources are available. What we have to achieve is the access and the equity. And to do that will require programs against poverty. They will require programs of perhaps producing food in areas where you don't produce food today. And it is a sad fact that more food today is lost in the fields of Africa, in post-harvest loss, than WFP brings to feed the vulnerable people in Africa. So if we could actually now find access, find a way to stop loss, find a way to overcome poverty, leaving no one behind in food security is achievable. It's not easy, but if we don't believe in it, then we definitely won't achieve it.
What are the challenges that you're facing?
Challenges, of course, are going to be primarily, as I've said, about one of access, which means tackling first instance poverty. In other words, improving an individual's access so that that individual has a sustainable way to continue to reach food, which means that we have to overcome poverty as well if we're going to really achieve hunger as a sustainable matter. But also, we know that many, many people who have problems in achieving food security or reaching the food they need, or with us reaching them with the food they need, are in situations of conflict. And so we have that as an issue. So I would say there are economic issues, there are political issues, and then there are policy issues of land, for instance, land tenure.
Former child soldiers need to be treated humanely and not as menaces to society, an advocate for children's rights has said. Kaba Williams was one of those forcefully recruited in Sierra Leone by the Revolutionary United Front rebels at the age of 7, rescued and reintegrated into his community with the support of the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, and partners in 1994. He later earned a degree in literature and linguistics at Njala University. Mr. Williams is currently writing a book, and a portion of the proceeds will help finance rehabilitation programs for other former child soldiers. Deganit Perez asked him how the experience had changed him and what hope there was for people facing similar situations.
Well, the challenge is there. It's enormous. At this point in time, former child soldiers are facing the most crucial part of their lives, because looking at the terrorism that is going around the world, and it makes it very difficult for governments and other groups to release these children. But I can tell you, if I can go through and succeed to become somebody, then definitely day to day have a better thing, because all they need is like, they need a better place to live. They need an education. They need a mother, somebody that can at least regulate. So it's like, not that former child soldiers, they don't have a place. They have a place in society. If society is willing to forgive and accept us as people rather than as menace in society.
You mentioned that religion and education were two key aspects to be reintegrated into society and to find a value system in your life. Could you describe maybe a little bit how those two things, religion and education, helped you?
One, education helps me greatly, because the time I was using to concentrate on violent stuff when I was a child, when I was with the armed group, when I found myself in the SOS Children's Village, it's like I don't have that time anymore, because I have to spend the time to solve my English assignment, my math assignment, so I won't have time to think about violence. Important. And the religious aspect is like going to church or going to mosque is just like a counseling, wherein the pastor or the imam will be administering about the good moral things that are acceptable in society and how we should treat ourselves.
So since you were 7, and for many years after that, you were taken away from your home. People tried to convince you to commit acts of violence, right? So they tried to convince you that it was acceptable. And so all of a sudden you found yourself taken away from that milieu and explained that life is sacred and that you shouldn't be violent. How was the transition?
It was gradual. For instance, the SOS Children's Village played a very significant role, but because for the fact that they have a village and it is strictly being controlled. It's like from school to your home, from home to school. So I tend to move from that culture of violence to a culture of peace, because I find myself in a home wherein I'm treated like any other child in the society.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.